Welcome to Blue Shift, brought to you from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. I'm Maggie Massetti. Sarah and I were privileged recently to interview space artist Ron Miller. Not only does he create gorgeous illustrations, but he's an author, consultant, and former art director for the National Air and Space Museum's Albert Einstein Planetarium. He's written and illustrated many books, but I know I remember clearly his book from the 80s, Out of the Cradle, which was really popular and a big inspiration when I was growing up. We recently came across his art illustrating a news article about an unusual exoplanet system a college friend of mine discovered that might actually have rings, much like Saturn's. We'll be sharing an interview with my friend about this system, but we're also intrigued by the art illustrating it and how it came about. This led us to Ron, and resulted in this two-part podcast all about his extraordinary work. Please do visit our blog at universe.nasa.gov/blueshift, as we've posted the art that we discussed with him during the interview. Without further ado, here's part one. Thanks again for joining us. We're really fascinated by the art of yours that we saw online. Can you tell us a little bit about your background as an artist?
Well, I started off all traditional media, largely because that's all that was available when I was in school and starting work. I went to an art college and studied to be an illustrator, and that's what I did for 10 years or so, you know, doing you know, advertising work, commercial illustration for various advertising art studios in Columbus, Ohio. Newspaper ads, shoes, annual reports, all that kind of thing. But I always loved astronomy. And so I was doing some space paintings at home on my own, just because it was, you know, I like that stuff. When I learned that the Air and Space Museum was going to have a planetarium in its new, you know, in the new museum, I wrote to them, asked, you don't need an artist, do you? They said, I hadn't really thought about it. I campaigned, talked to them into creating the position, and went there to work for 4 or 5 years, and went freelance after that, and been a freelance illustrator ever since.
You started out in traditional media. At some point, did you transition to digital?
About 12 years ago, I got a contract to write and illustrate a series, I think it was 10 or 12 books for young adults, all in the solar system. And I started the first 3 or 4 paintings and realized there was no way I was going to make the deadline. So I had to write and illustrate. I think it was, came out the average like 2 books every 3 months, something like that. And I thought, this is ridiculous. But my friends, my artist friends, have been trying to get me to start working digitally for years. And I resisted it because I was really afraid stuff was going to look generic. Rubber stamped, run of the mill, digital art.
Right.
So I swallowed hard and did a few things and sent it off, and my friend said, hey, these look just like Ron Miller paintings, which is all I needed to hear. And I think maybe I've done 2 traditionally painted space paintings since then, partly because I get bored doing a paint after a little while, and if it takes longer, say, than 2 days to do a painting, I'll just put it down and say it's done. In the same amount of time, I can do a digital painting that looked like I took a week and a half painting in traditional media, because I eliminated all the stuff I didn't like about painting. You know, mixing paint, cleaning the airbrushes. Say, having to take 5 minutes just to make one little dot of one color, because I had to mix the paint first, then make the dot, then clean the brush and make the next color. All that was removed. So I was able to focus all the sort of non-painting, non-creative time on being creative. It was much more efficient, and the results were much better. Since every time I do a picture, there's something new to learn, I really haven't had the incentive, really, to go back and paint a space painting in traditional media again.
What inspires you as an artist about space and science?
Oh, what wouldn't? When I wrote my history of space art 20 years ago, whatever it was, I pointed out that there's a real parallel between space artists and the Hudson River School, the mid to late 19th century, you know, people, you know, like Thomas Moran and Alfred Bierstadt. These people went out west to Yellowstone and Yosemite and saw, you know, the Grand Canyon and Yosemite Valley and all this for the first time, and brought back, you know, all these grand and grandiose paintings of these places. It was really the only way most people could even visit these places, let alone see them, was through these paintings. And I think space art, at least the kind of space art I do, which among my colleagues is referred to, we're rock and ball artists, you know, we're really just trying to visit places that are as wonderful as Yellowstone and Yosemite through the only media by which we can really do it. And even with, you know, the NASA probes and and spacecraft, most of them, with the exception, say, of the Mars rovers, for instance, they're still flybys. They're still aerial views. You know, you're seeing all these places from space. And, say, touring Mars, say, through a Mars orbiter, or Saturn's moons through Cassini, it's kind of like touring the United States from 30,000 feet in an airliner. Space art, we can put you on the surface. Instead of, you know, seeing the Grand Canyon from 30,000 feet from an airliner, you know, I can put you on the North Rim, looking out across it. So that's part of the fun of doing this, is taking in the information that we know is there. So, see, I know Mariner Valley's on Mars, you know, and I know all, you know, the geology's out about it. And knowing all that, I can put myself in it.
Along those lines, how much research does go into an individual image? Like, how do you balance data and art to make the artist concept that's beautiful but also accurate to what you're trying to present?
Sometimes it takes more research and takes time to do the painting.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah. And it depends what's available. I mean, sometimes if I'm doing, say, an extrasolar planet, maybe all I know is that it's so big and so far from its star, and that's about it. It leaves a lot more leeway for invention, even though the invention still has to be informed invention. I'm doing something like an ice geyser on Enceladus, then, you know, I'm much more constrained. But no more constrained than I would be if I was actually there painting it. Doing the research and looking up all the details and data is really just in lieu of being on the spot. I enjoy doing the research. It's fun. It's neat being able to say, you know, see that rock? That's really there. or it could really be there. Because, you know, if I just want to make it about a whole cloth, I could. But then I couldn't say it's a painting of that place. You know, I could do a picture of George Washington and make him look like anything. I make him look like Ernest Borgnine or something, which I could, you know, pretty free to do. But by the same token, then I couldn't say it's a portrait of George Washington. So then I'm just going to say this is a picture of Saturn seen from Titan. Then, you know, kind of behooves me to make some effort
to make, you know, Saturn look like Saturn.
Exactly. I enjoy doing that. That's a fun part of it.
Which do you like better, trying to make your version of Saturn or something that gives you complete free rein to make up something completely new?
I like some of the constraints because you have to be creative within them. Making something out of a whole cloth can be fun, but having no constraints at all is a kind of a constraint in itself. Because you can do anything. But coming up with something that's just equally beautiful but within, you know, certain bounds, and kind of forces you to think harder. And you still have to make a pretty picture. You know, space art, bottom line, it's a landscape painting. And it has to succeed as a landscape painting before anything else. So I have to do that first. You know, if the facts being right, just as a challenge to it that making up out of whole cloth wouldn't have.
Do you ever collaborate with scientists and they give you feedback like, no, that's not quite right, or this should be represented differently, or?
Yeah. there are some scientists like Bill Hartman, who I've collaborated with a zillion times, but he's an artist as well. So he kind of knows what the kind of information an artist needs because, you know, he paints these things himself and he's really easy to work with. But other scientists, they're too close to the subject. They can't be objective enough to not understand that sometimes you have to fiddle with a detail. You have to change a detail to make the detail right. There are some things they don't quite understand. But when I'm doing something for a publication where, like, sort of say, for Scientific American, then, you know, the author has a lot to say, rightly so, because, you know, it has to be correct in that case. It kind of depends on who and what you're doing the picture for. By the same token, it kind of depends on which scientist you're talking to. Some understand what you need to know, and some haven't got a clue. Years ago, I was going to do a picture. I wanted to do a picture of the Milky Way galaxy seen from some planet outside the galaxy. I thought, well, you know, I wonder how bright the Milky Way would be, you know, seen if you can see the whole thing at once. So I talked to Bart Bach, who was like Mr. Milky Way. He wrote all the books about it. He did all the fundamental research. I called him up, and I said, say, if you were far enough away from the Milky Way to see it, you know, in your night sky, like a big pinwheel, how bright would it look? And he said, I never thought about that. A lot of astronomers and scientists, they don't think visually. They'll think in terms of really a column of numbers or a graph. Really think how that translates into something visual.
Yeah, I think translation is a big thing. It's kind of what we do here also. We do a lot of education and outreach, which is really translating what the scientists say so the public or educators can use it. So it's tricky also, like doing space art, in that, you know, it has to be something that's understandable or pleasing to the person who's listening to you, but it also has to be correct, and balancing those things and working with scientists to try to get that correct yet still appealing is can be challenging. Be sure to visit our website at universe.nasa.gov/blueshift to see Ron's art and to check out our other blogs and podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook, where we're NASA Blueshift, all one word. Feel free to send us your questions about astrophysics and to let us know what you want to hear more about. I'm Maggie Massetti, bringing the universe closer to you with Blueshift.